nausea started in her gut, her ears blasted by the blow to her equilibrium. She fought to stay on her feet, to keep the darkness at bay. Her hands trembled. She felt the urge to turn the weapon on herself. She gritted her teeth, grinding them to keep herself focused.
I said, you know you won't.
It's armed all right. And running.
Ryan stood over the nuke, feeling as helpless as a child. He looked at JB, who was scratching his head. The armorer pushed his spectacles back up the bridge of his nose and shook his head.
Dark Knight. Arms I know, but it's the comp on this that stops me. I just hope Doc and Millie can sort it out.
The two doctors stood over the incongruously painted nuke, examining the panel.
There must be a series of codes that program it, and so there must be a series that will deprogram, right?
I believe I saw something like this in one of the files I was privy to study. Usually, it is a combination of letters and numbers that relate to those on the actual cone itself, probably to trigger an association in an emergency, much like this one, but not perhaps under the same bizarre circumstances.
He favored her with a ghoulish smile.
Spare me the gallows humor, Doc. At least until this mother stops ticking.
Very well. Although, to be pedantic, it cannot be said to actually tick. Now, if we can just scrape some of this paint from the cone...
He tapped a section of the nose cone with his sword stick. Then JB stepped forward and began to scrape the top layer of paint away with his Tecna.
Is this safe?
Well, if we don't try, it will go off anyway.
That makes me feel so much better.
Fireblast, this is so slow.
Patience, friend Ryan, patience. Here, let me try something with these numbers.
Doc punched in a corresponding series to the numbers that were shown, but nothing happened.
It's still going.
Obviously. There is a failsafe backup I cannot enter, something only the programmer would know.
What? You didn't mention that before, you stupid old buzzard. How the hell are we supposed to know that?
Well, my dear Dr. Wyeth, I would deduce that the programmer was someone in the redoubt we arrived in, and it would be something personal, a name, perhaps. Six letters, no more. They were all six-letter codes.
Well, have you got any ideas?
Frankly, no.
Ryan and JB just looked blank. For them, it could be anything. But inspiration suddenly hit Mildred.
It's a long shot, but it's our only chance.
She began to tap in six letters. The LED flashed, the figures frozen. Then, with a beep, it turned itself off. JB stared at her.
What the hell did you tell it?
I just put in the name Garcia. It was just something on one of the posters from the redoubt. I'll explain it sometime. Let's just say you'll be grateful when you're dead.
I very much doubt it.
Through the blackness and confusion, a wave of strength hit Christy. Somehow she had picked up on her friends and the wave of relief from them. It gave her strength. And within her mind she saw her mother back in harmony, telling her about the power that could be wielded by those who work together for a common good. It wasn't a power that could be measured like blasters or grens, but it had its own strength. A strength that for one crucial moment allowed her mind to clear from Jenna's influence. Christy's hands were twisted awkwardly and painfully toward her own body, pointing the blaster at herself. She straightened them so that the blaster was pointed directly at Jenna. The Baron's wife realized that she had momentarily lost her grip on her adversary. In that second, fear entered those glittering black eyes. It was all the relief that Christy needed. The shot entered Jenna's forehead, neatly between her eyes. Those glittering, raven eyes finally dulled and died. Christy, drained of all energy, fainted. She was still unconscious when Jack and Dean found her some minutes later. It took several days for Blake, the new sect chief, to set straight the mess that Raw had become. The chilled bodies had to be disposed of, and those Ville dwellers who had sided with Harvey had to be searched out. Those who didn't recant on their decision were to be exiled. Needless to say, all of them swore to be loyal to Alien. Blake wasn't so stupid as to believe them out of hand, and so established a list of those citizens who needed to be watched.
Yeah, things will never be the same.
And they wouldn't be. Alien was a shadow of his former self. The knowledge of his wife's betrayal and the depth of her depravity had severely dented his belief in his ability to rule, and it would take him time to rebuild his barony, He attended the cremation of Jenna, supported by Doc. J.B. helped the armorers set the armory straight, Mildred assisted the medical staff of the Ville, and Ryan and Jack sat in with Blake as he attempted to build a new structure to the Ville that took account of what had happened, but didn't stray too far from the precepts of Alien and his ancestors, the precepts in which Blake also believed. Christie took the entire period to recover from the psychic attack she had endured before chilling Jenna. Although she hadn't drawn on the Gaia power that aided her in times of great physical demand, she felt as though she had. She tired easily, ached all over, and felt as though she could sleep all day. But eventually she was well enough for them to leave. Blake accompanied them to the exit that led out to the forest. Alien wouldn't go with them, wouldn't even acknowledge that they were leaving. As they stood on the threshold of the Ville, the new sect chief grasped Jack by the arm.
"I'm sorry to see you go. I need all the good people I can get. You're good people. If you ever come back this way..."
"Maybe. Maybe not Wanda someday."
Jack knew, however, that in some ways he would always be searching. Blake watched them as they marched through the forest until they were out of sight, then returned to his own battle. JB sighted through his mini-sextant and took their direction. They were on the edge of the forest, back on the road out of Old Seattle, toward the valley of Sontvogel.
"Which way should we head?"
"Can't go back to the redoubt and jump. No way of getting back in there."
"Could follow the blacktop north.
Maybe find those stoops with lasers."
"That would be most interesting. Always assuming they do not just want to chill us."
Christie noticed that Ryan was staring at the horizon.
"What do you say, lover? You think those mysterious troopers we ran into could be the key?"
"To the promised land? Anything's possible. Though I feel like we've been cheated somehow. Like we could have learned more in Raw if Jenna hadn't been a crazy. If the Illuminated Ones are still out there, still living apart from the rest of us, we could have perhaps learned something about them that would have taken us away from all this."
"Maybe we still will, but not out here. If there are any answers, and perhaps we are getting closer to finding that Erewhon, then we need to get to shelter before the sun goes down."
"Fireblast. I should be that smart, not just leave it to you. Let's head north toward the nearest redoubt."
JB sighted in his mini-sextant, plotting a course north that took them past Old Seattle and up toward the old pre-dark borders, up toward the lands where the Illuminated Ones and the Promised Land were said to be. Deathlands is a living hell, but there is someplace worse, a parallel Earth where the atomic megacol never happened. Now this other world Earth is in its final death throes, yet for an elite few, the reality portal offers a new frontier of raw energy and expendable slaves, a bastion of power for one Dreda Otis Trask. Her invasion force of genetically engineered warrior women has turned the ruins of Salt Lake City into the deadly mining grounds of a grotesque new order. One that lies in wait for Ryan Cotter and his companions. Deathlands 57, Breakthrough. Deathlands 56, Sunchild, is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Terrence Aselford, and Thomas Penny. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb and Dan Smith. Sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby.